Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm really excited to have Michael Johnson here. He's a PhD in material science, and he's an entrepreneur, scientist, and today he's running NJII, an innovation lab for New Jersey. And really excited to have you here, Michael. Maybe you could do a better job introducing yourself for the audience, and then we can just get into a good chat.
Excellent, Dean. Thank you for having me today. Yeah, so I'm the president of New Jersey Innovation Institute. My background, I'm a PhD scientist. I started and founded a company that I eventually sold to a publicly traded Swedish company that was in the life sciences space. But today I'm privileged to be running NJI, which is the state's Polytechnic University NJIT's think tank and research institute. So we have about 100 employees that work at NJI, and we're focused on bridging the gap between academia, so higher ed, and the outside world. All of our resources, all of our assets, all of our really smart people in this country, most of them reside in higher ed, but for the outside world, it's really tough to work with them. So NJIT launched NJI about 10 years ago with the sole purpose of bridging that gap, being a conduit between the outside world and the state's Polytechnic University. And so we operate in four divisions: defense, artificial intelligence, we're helping businesses adopt AI, entrepreneurship, so we have about a $12 million venture fund that we're using to build companies out of NJIT in partnership with corporations. And then lastly, healthcare is our biggest pillar, where we do healthcare IT services for the state of New Jersey and various other players across the state, and helping move data around from patients to payers and providers. And for us, we're focused on fostering innovation, accelerating translational research, and upskilling workers in New Jersey and beyond.
Yeah, that's a big mission. That covers a lot. So I'm curious, like, what you as an organization, you yourself are so busy, how are you guys applying AI to, and what are some of the challenges you guys are having with AI running your organization?
It's a fair question, because if we go out and we tell a company how they should be using AI, of course, we should be using it internally as well. Like every company, we start with the basic stuff, like having Copilot internalized. We're looking at our own communications, our own documents, using that internally for simple stuff, email writing, looking at meetings, suggesting things, recordings, all the basic blocking and tackling of using AI. But from there, second level of that is actually going and getting some additional insights we can make business decisions from. So I just put a post today on LinkedIn on just one of these simple things that every business can do, which is auditing expenses, for example. We applied this about 2 years ago when I first came on board, of just looking at every subscription, every piece of software. Okay, we're using this piece of software, which is Shutterstock, that costs $5,000 a year. Hey, there's this piece over here, Video Blocks, that costs $2 a month. Boom, $5,000 of savings overnight, where we're applying AI to answer questions like that. How can I cut expenses in subscriptions? So we're taking tools and turning them inwards. HR handbooks, HR policies, same thing. Hiring process, looking at candidates. Really every single dimension you can think of, we're looking at. And one of the ways that we do that is having all of our divisional leaders have specific AI goals around how they're employing AI within their businesses. And ultimate quantitative goal is to get everyone at the organization about 20% more efficient over the next year and a half using AI and pushing our folks to get up to speed. If we find there is a gap, someone doesn't understand how to use something, we're trying to train them and bring them up to speed. But one of the big gaps is just getting all of your employees to understand what AI is, how they can actually use it on a day-to-day basis. And then there's the bigger overarching stuff of actually building tools and software. And we're partnering with a few law enforcement agencies in the state to actually help them use AI to, through body cam data, predict bad outcomes before they actually happen. Oh, nice. So like real cutting edge stuff, but everything in between.
So who builds that? Are those startups in your incubator, or is that actually professors and students?
We have an internal AI division. So we have about 100 employees within NJI itself. And we have a small AI team that's building solutions externally for small businesses and companies. We sometimes turn that internally and build stuff for ourselves as well. But being part of a polytechnic university, we're able to pull in graduate students. We have one of the largest computer science programs in the whole tri-state area.
Awesome.
We're pulling undergraduate students in, we're pulling in faculty and staff to work on different things. So we have a lot of manpower and woman power as well to help with different types of projects. So it's all the above. It depends on what exactly it is, but we're pulling those folks in and working with them on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, that's great. So if you're like a entrepreneur and you want to like join, what is that like? Do they have to be a student of Rutgers or and do they come to your, I saw that you have a really big lab, like 1,000 square foot incubator, and do they sit there and they get support from professors and how does that all work?
Yeah, it's an awesome question. So NJIT, being the state's polytech university, we're squarely focused on STEM. And that positions us rather uniquely as we have a huge talent pool, about 16,000 students that are all focused around this core mission and core directive, really smart students that are there. But for us as NJI, we want to have a return on investment. We want to be profitable. We're a non-for-profit business, but I view it more as a tax-exempt business. We want to be efficient. We want to grow. We want to reinvest in growth so we can have more impact. So for us, we look at NJIT, the state's Polytechnic University educational side, and we say, you're focused on the student entrepreneurship journey. And we have a whole team of people that does that. So translational research for faculty, student educational programs. We just launched a center for student entrepreneurship, NJIT. For us as NJI, what we're focused on is how do we partner with corporations to build companies? So, for example, if there's a company that has a bunch of intellectual property assets sitting on their shelf, but they're stuck and they're stuck through bureaucracy, they don't know how to position them, we help them build the company around those. And there are some companies that say that, hey, we have this great thing that we love to spin out, but we don't even know where to get started. Where we come in is we'll put up to $1 million into building a company in partnership with a corporation. So if a corporation has a piece of intellectual property and they say, we're not the best position to take this to market, we think a startup is the best vehicle, we'll work with them. We'll hire a CTO, we'll invest money. They usually are saying, we'll be a customer of this thing. If you build it, we'll partner with you guys. But we're trying to build companies de novo from the ground up. We tend not to do a lot of investing in companies, but more so trying to build companies out of our venture fund. And then for students and faculty, that's mostly NJIT. But if there is a faculty that wants to launch a company and has great intellectual property, we will work with them to build that. Most of the times, the faculty don't actually want to be the CEO or CTO. So we're helping them build and scale that opportunity.
Yeah, that's cool. I've never heard of that. So they already have a lot of these companies already have IP, but it's not their core focus. So you build talent and teams to bring that to market, expand that use case. And yeah, that's quite interesting. That's really cool. And what are some of the interesting companies that you guys are incubating or working with now?
One of the great examples is a company called BioCentric. It's now changed its name to Made Scientific, but about 6, 7 years ago, NJIT started getting inquiries from industry saying, can you guys do small scale cell and gene therapy manufacturing, these expensive CAR T drugs? And the big boys can do the big projects, but for the smaller Series A and B and C startups, they didn't have anybody to turn to do their manufacturing. And NJIT, it had lab space, it had clean room space, it had the right people, and said, why don't we build a for-profit company to do this under NJII? So as a 501c3, you can do that. And we built this company called BioCentric that did small-scale cell and gene therapy manufacturing. That company was able to grow, and just about 2, 3 years ago, we sold it for about $73 million. And
Wow.
that was a case where we had all the back office, all the support, all the resources of higher ed we were leveraging to build this company to meet a real need in the marketplace. And it was a huge success. And our current effort, the funding that we're putting forward, is trying to replicate that by building companies de novo. In that case, there was no founder in a garage. It was putting all the pieces together to meet the industry need. And we're well positioned to do that as a higher education institution that has all those resources. Traditional VCs don't have all those resources like we do.
No, I've never heard of that before. I talked to a lot of private equity and VC guys, and yeah, they just look for a great entrepreneur and then build a great product team. So, how you must have really good ways to recruit people and teams, and like, how do you go about building the people side once you get a good idea?
Yeah, that's the most difficult part. So every business model has some loose end, and that's ours. And this is the Venture Studio challenge, is finding that person, because what you're trying to find is a person who's going to work for 5 years, 100 hours a week for very little money and equity. Those are rare people. They don't exist a lot. I was one of them. They're just not out there. They're strange people and they're tough to find. So we try and work with all the other players in the ecosystem to find who those people are. And when that person sells their first company or their first company blows up, we want to be there to say, hey, we got this opportunity. It's coming up in 6 months. Do you want to work on it together? Because they're a rare breed. We try and build a network to keep those relationships and have those people close at hand. And there's other venture studios out there that we talk to and try to understand who's out there that might be potential talent. But that's the most difficult part for sure. But the advantage that we have is anytime we're starting a company, we're finding a big corporation that is saying, I want to buy your thing. I'm going to partner with you. I'm going to give you resources on day one. And if you get to point A, B, or C, we will sign a license. We'll buy your products. We'll
Yeah,
commit to
maybe.
something. If we have that on day one, it de-risks the company tremendously versus that founder in their garage.
And is it key to find that CEO, or is there a few key people to accelerate building out the team and taking the idea? Like, how do you guys approach that?
So as a venture studio, we can only get the idea so far. So we can get the corporation on the table. We can put the money on the table. We can find the first couple partners, but you need that founder who's going to be the lifeblood of that company, who's going to put their sweat and blood into it. So it really is dependent on that person. Now, we might find after 6 months that we have the wrong CEO or CTO or whatever and switch to somebody else. And that's part of the process of building these companies is it can be messy at the beginning and finding that talent is difficult.
And do they get 10% equity, 50% equity? What, I
It's
guess
a good
not much
question. Yeah. So
today, but like.
if you start a company in your garage, you're getting 100%. So the way we view it is that we're adding a huge amount of value. We're bringing the IP, the partners, and it depends largely on who the founder is and what their expertise is. But it could be anywhere, I would say reasonably from 10 to 40% or so of the equity is going to that founding team that we're bringing on. So it's not the 80 or 90 as you see in early seed stage VC companies, but we also are in a very different spot than those companies are. Different model. We're holding more equity, but we're also putting up a big check at the beginning.
Yeah, and what do you like most about your job?
I'm very passionate about taking IP and bringing it to market, commercializing and turning into real products and services. I come from higher ed. I'm an academic by background, and I went that journey. So I took my intellectual property that my co-founder developed during our PhDs, we turned into a company and we sold the company. I've lived that journey. And I find that to be the only way that we get innovations to market. The only way we change the world is we find a way to take these super cool things in labs and research universities and bring them to the light of day. Otherwise, they get stuck. And you would think if there's a great idea, of course somebody will buy it and bring it to market, but it's not the case. And I'm in a position with my role to help facilitate getting those things to market, to improving the way people live, even in the case of therapeutics, actually changing people's lives and helping them live longer and healthier lives. So for all that, very intellectually stimulating, science is just cool. So I love what I do. I'm very passionate about it.
Yeah, that's great. Do you guys have a repeatable process or a framework the way? Because it's quite difficult. Like, it's cool. I never heard of, first of all, like, already have intellectual property, have a customer with feedback, but it's so hard. I've done this myself too. It's hard to build teams, bring products to market. And do you guys have a repeatable process you guys go through since you're trying to, and you're doing it across many science disciplines?
It depends who you talk to. If I'm raising another fund, I'm going to tell them that we have a repeatable process. To be honest, it's not actually the case. The repeatable process for launching additional companies is that we need to have a corporate partner that commits substantially on day one. Financially, they're committing to being a customer. That's the critical piece. The next piece is that we have to be able to add value as NJIT and NJI. So it can't just be something totally out of our domain space that we're helping facilitate. There has to be some unique value proposition, whether the company's going to use our high performance computing cluster, whether there's faculty that are involved. There has to be something that we're adding to the company for it to be a good fit. And then the other part is we need to have a major inflection point in value within about 18 months. What we're doing is we're writing a check for $1 million into these companies on day one. And the reason we're doing that is so we can get a good CEO or a good CTO on board. We can pay them a modest salary for a long duration, enough to get to a time period where they can actually have first sale, they can generate revenue, potentially even stand on their own 2 feet. But we don't want to invest in companies that are going to require a $10 million Series A and then a $50 million Series B. We don't want that. We're not trying to hit huge home runs. We're trying to hit singles and doubles as a venture studio. And that allows us to keep investing and keep doing it. So it's not as if we were a repeatable process, but when you have a customer at the table on day one, the risk is gone. Not gone, but it's greatly diminished.
And do they put up a minimum of $1 million too, or like how
We'd
does?
like to. So we are valuing some of those relationships where the partner would put money. It depends on who the partner is exactly, but at the very least, they're committing to being a customer, and then they're also committing to giving us support and guidance and being there, working with us along the way.
Yeah, that's great.
To give you a sense is the best situation is that, let's say a big pharma company comes to us and says, we have this problem where we put claims out into the marketplace that are wrong. We get sued, we lose hundreds of millions of dollars. So can you create an AI company that makes sure that our claims aren't screwed up and we don't get sued? And at the end of the day, if we do that successfully in 18 months, they're going to buy it and pay for it. And then we're also going to be able to sell that to all their friends and customers as well. That's like the best case scenario. They've given us the problem, it meets their need, and we have a customer on day one and we build it. That big company, they probably could do it, but they would pay Deloitte or Accenture like $20 million and it probably won't go anywhere versus us doing it for $1 million with a lean team that has something to gain from doing that.
Yeah, that's amazing. If you that's like an entrepreneur's dream to have that, to find the use case and customer. And yeah, I never heard of this. I really like that model.
It's a relatively new thing. In New Jersey, we were the first venture studio launched in New Jersey. There's others across the country, but it's not a very common thing because you have to have the whole back office support to launch these companies. So you have to build out a finance team, an HR team, and all these things, which we already have as NGI. So it's a lot more resource intensive than a traditional venture fund where I just launch with a fund and two guys or girls in a closet looking at companies.
Yeah. So you have a you offer that to the startups, all that
Correct.
back office and that infrastructure, and yeah, that's great. Something
Yeah.
I'm really passionate about. We're building on AI. We're a software tools company, but there's so much hype out there about how AI is taking jobs. Oh, no more computer science, no more programming, which is so far from the truth. We need so many more engineers, and maybe you could share like what your thoughts are there because. Where the hype of where things are at, the potential is amazing, but we need more engineers, we need more scientists, and AI is just an enabler. But maybe you could share some of your thoughts around that.
I'll give you my personal thought on this is, and I always use this example, not to pick on accountants, but the computer internet came out 30 years ago, give or take. And at the time, we had companies with accountants. And you would have thought that having Excel would have gotten rid of most of the accountants. But somehow, with the introduction of the internet and Excel, we got five times as many accountants per
Yeah.
capita, per GDP, whatever metric you want to gauge, than we had in the 1990s. Why that happened? Inefficiencies. They built up, they expanded, and we had this huge increase of white collar workers. And I think what you're seeing with AI is it's bringing to surface the question of why did we add all these people in the last 30 years? And do we really need all these white collar workers? And it doesn't affect all things the same way, but I think companies are looking at themselves and saying, hey, we got too many chiefs and not enough people actually doing work. Let's stop doing this. You're starting to see a lot of companies cut back on white collar labor. So it's HR, it's analysts, it's finance people, it's accounting people. And AI is doing a lot of those jobs very simply. And however, Excel could have done those jobs too 10 or 20 years ago, but I think the pressure is so high now. With that too, you're getting this demographic cliff where there's just not as many workers, and companies are saying, okay, I'm running a hospital. I don't have nurses. I like actually need robots. I need data to tell me which rooms to go into and when. I need AI, or else we won't be able to operate. So that's like happening in the background. And then you have a bunch of students and people who have jobs and they have expertise that just aren't valuable anymore with the advent of AI. And I think when people say you're getting rid of programming, it's hyperbolic. Like what you're getting rid of are the things where you just did basic stuff that I can do now with Grok or ChatGPT or Cursor or any other platforms that are out there. But the guys who can actually put all the pieces together and not have it just turn out garbage, they're more valuable than ever. But like the bottom entry-level jobs, the first 10 years of your career, man, it's like a white collar apocalypse for jobs. And I don't think that's going to go away. The students that are going to add a lot of value when they come out of college and go into careers are the ones that can leverage all these tools. But yeah, white collar jobs, they're not going to be what they are. They're going to revert back to what they were probably 40, 50 years ago. We just don't need them the way we allegedly needed them for the last 30 years. That's my personal take on it. Along the way, we're going to have a lot of pain and disruption.
Yeah. We're gonna shape it how we're using it, but it's not gonna eliminate. It's gonna extend, and you need new skills, and you'll get more done. And even like we're in the coding space, and it's you still need critical thinkers, you need software developers, and you're just leveraging AI to be more productive. But it can't think at this higher level or integrate all these complex systems. And anyways, I love what CEO of AWS said. Yeah, this silliest thing I heard was like not hiring entry level people. Like a lot of incredible talents coming in, and you got to nurture and coach them, and they're your next VPs and inventors. And so it's, yeah, the hype, and I worry about the hype impacting people's decision to study the sciences or computer science. And don't listen to the hype. Ton of opportunity
Right.
is my message. Yeah, that's great. So what about data? Do you guys like teach your companies how to use data and AI, or do you just look for, do you guys get at that level involved, or?
Well, we're trying to help small mid-sized businesses adopt AI. And what tends to happen is I talk to CEOs all day, every day, and the way they see AI, just by and large and generalizing here, is that they know what problems they have that can be addressed by AI. They just don't know where to get started. Because if you're a 500 person company, you have 4 to 10 IT people, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, but you don't have a big IT team. And you definitely don't have any computer scientists. And you probably don't have anybody who's been trained on AI. So you don't know where to get started, but you know what the things that can be fixed with AI are. So where we're coming in is we're looking at these companies and saying, okay, you need a RAG tool to go ahead and do your HR policies. You need a tool that can go ahead and predict cost overruns for your construction project by looking at A, B, and C, and here's how we tie it together. Relatively basic stuff, but it's like AI software development as a service. And we're doing a ton of that. And that's something that we add a lot of value with, especially when like a Deloitte or an Accenture comes in and says, oh, it'll cost $10 million. And then we come in and we say, hey, there's a $5 a month subscription over here that does the same thing. And they're like, really? Yeah, it's changed a lot in the last year. So we're trying to constantly add value for those businesses in New Jersey by building out those tools. And a lot of it is just education. My prior career as CEO and co-founder of business, like most of the tools I learned were irrelevant now. Like I was chief commercial officer and like search engine optimization, totally dead. Inbound content marketing, totally dead. So we're trying to help educate companies on what they can do now, where a lot of the things they were doing are just totally dead. The things they spent their whole college learning are dead.
Oh, so you guys also can help them with go-to-market, sales, marketing, and all of that
If
as
it comes
well.
up, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, you guys are offering them many services. So what, Michael, what question didn't I ask that you wish I would have asked you?
I would think probably the most pertinent question today is just if you're a business owner, what should you be thinking about with AI? Because, like I said before, talking with CEOs, they're terrified of AI and falling behind their peers. So that would be the question if you want me to answer it.
Yeah, I would love it. Yeah.
The thing I think they should be doing is getting as many people to come in and learn about their business and their problems as possible. Talk to as many consultants as you possibly can. Talk to your peers as much as you can because everyone's in the same boat. Nobody's figured it out, even the big guys, on where to add huge value. And there was a study that came out just recently. It was from MIT, and take it for what it's worth. It was like 95% of pilots with AI fail. If you read the actual study, it wasn't that they failed, so they didn't add tremendous value. But for how to run pilot studies and how to launch AI, how to integrate AI, it's just talking to as many people as possible. And I would suggest turn to higher ed as well, because that's where a lot of these ideas are coming from. Not your traditional consulting firms that are going to try and sell you something no matter what, but really figuring out where it can add value and talking to as many people as possible. And that's where we fit in. We have those conversations. Even if we don't add any value, we've added value just by having the conversation. And we're a non-for-profit. So we want to help people in New Jersey and beyond no matter what. And at the end of the day, we're trying to help foster innovation the best we can.
Yeah, awesome. That's excellent. Thanks for sharing that. And if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Best spot is njii.com, or for me, I'm on all the socials, Instagram, X, LinkedIn, et cetera. Just think, find me there.
Yeah, you guys are really offering a great service and very uniquely positioned. Yeah, good job, and thank you for coming on the show.
Of course, Steve, thank you for the opportunity. Really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.